Hey folks, what's going on? Welcome to Climbing the Ladder, episode 54. We call in this state of the map making community because we have a bunch of map makers and Plexa from TL to help us go through just what's going on with the map making community and just all the craziness. But I'm your host, Shaman V, and joining me as always is Mr. John Clark and Richard Lewis. What's up, fellas?
Yo,
not much.
Very
excited
good.
To be looking, here.
You know what,
yeah,
dude?
Looking forward to this one, man.
I don't know. You know, I was gonna actually not shave for the last 3 days, right? And actually go, but my ass like is. I mean, it's so habitual for me to shave that I accidentally shaved last night, and I was like, fuck.
Accidentally.
I was like, shit.
What is your overall beard standard like? I mean, are you in the same manly league as me and John?
Definitely not. I mean, it's only limited to definitely the goatee area, and then I start end up then this area starts looking like Fu Manchu-ish. So it's
dude, you rock up with a Fu Manchu.
Oh, dude,
no way, man.
No way. But today we wanted to welcome again three folks from the map making community, and for those of you that were expecting this show to happen a lot earlier. I decided that we needed just more time to really. I needed more time to really do more research and make sure the right people were on here for this episode, since not many folks get a chance to talk about the map making community or want to talk about the map making community. So I wanted this to be as good as it could be. So I ended up picking the three of these guys because I feel like they have the best coverage of everything that's going on right now. So first off, we have Mr. Jesse Hart, Plexa, for those of you that know him on TL. What's up, Jesse?
Hey man, how's it going?
Jesse runs the TLMC, Team Liquid map making contest, and pretty much everything map related, right? Yeah. Or at least melee.
Anything map related on TL pretty much goes to me these days.
Yeah. Awesome. Next up, we got John Emerson, aka Sigma. Is Sigma Phi or just Sigma? I always called you just Sigma, but.
I always pronounce it Sigma Phi.
Okay, so Sigma Phi.
And sort of like Semper Phi, only it's Sigma
Phi. Oh, I gotcha. Cool. And John is, what, manager at Dreamforge? Or what's your official title?
The appropriate title is Team Leader.
Team Leader. Leader. That sounds much better. Much better. And lastly, we got Mr. Alex Cooper, Time Twister, for those of you that know him on TL. And he is from ESV. I think a lot of people know ESV, the big map making organization, or just group. What do you call each of those groups or
map making teams?
Map making teams. There you go. Thanks for making it, Alec. Man, I know you were rushing, taking a test or something, or an exam or something, just to make it back.
Yeah, I was in an exam. And my professor was late. Big mess. But got out just in time. So
it's all good. Well, awesome. I'm glad you were making on time. But yeah, sorry guys, so lots to talk about, and it's kind of hard to figure out where to start, but I figure getting an overview of what's going on currently, just generally for you guys, for the map makers, and just map making in general from an industry standpoint. So Plexa, I figure since you have a pretty good overall view of everything from Korea and in the West, I figured you'd maybe lead us off and kind of give us a summary of just the current state.
No problem. So basically right now, the map-making community is very much divided into two bits. You have the Korean map-making community, and then everyone else.
Mm-hmm. So isn't that how it is in StarCraft, period?
Well, it's been like that for the longest time, yeah.
That's a good point.
But I guess with Koreans flooding through everywhere now, dominating all the WCS tournaments, I mean, anyway. So in Korea, that's traditionally been dominated by Crux. And they're a Korean map-making team, and they've been around since the start of the GSL, if I believe. I think that's right. And they've basically been supplying the GSL with the maps since the start of the GSL. Recently, we've had Kespa come in, and they poached two of the Crux guys to be part of the Kespa team, mm-hmm. and they've been also developing maps. So basically, you have Crux and former Crux mappers pretty much dominating all of the Korean map making scene.
How big is Crux?
That's Korea. They're not very big. There's only about four or five guys on there. I mean, Alec or Sigma may know better than me, but I am under the impression it's not very big. As far as I know, the Korean map making community is five.
Five or six, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's about right. Yeah.
Yeah. The Korean map making community in general is actually quite small. We actually had an interesting case of a guy named Semo who is now a member of Crux, or at least contributed maps to Crux, who actually came to TL and the outside world, or away from Korea, to try get some feedback and some discussion on his maps, because it just wasn't happening inside of Korea. So it's very much a closed, tight-knit community there. Now, if we jump to the West, it's almost the opposite.
It's the Wild West.
Yeah, pretty much. For the longest time, we had ESV, and, which obviously Alex is a member of, and the Planetary Workshop, and they're not represented here today, but they've traditionally been the two titans in map-making community, and ESV got a pretty firm foothold as the premier mapping organization, largely in part because they had an ESV weekly tournament, and they got some very, very talented mappers. They had Alec, obviously, who became one of their strongest mappers. They had Sapporo Man, who he made Cloud Kingdom. That's enough said there. They also had Iron Man, who made Ohana. So ESV had pretty much everyone. And then I'm not sure quite what happened. The bit of internal collapse, and everyone retired. And now it's pretty much just Alec and New Sunshine, I think.
Well, isn't Iron Fire Man? Too. Iron Man's
still there. Yeah.
And,
Iron Man's still
Oh, Iron Man kind of retired in his semi-comeback, but yeah. But in ESV's absence, what we had Planetary Workshop come back really strong. We had Dreamforge startup, which obviously John's a member of. And we have another new organization, Galaxy, who's also starting to produce some maps. And we haven't quite seen who's going to, if there's any going to be any kind of ESV thing, any organization replacing ESV as that premier organization that we all look to. But yeah, at the moment, all the maps that get chosen from the Western community all come through TLMC, with the exception of Atlas. I don't know how you guys manage that, but congrats.
Thank you. It's
a pretty big achievement getting something into GSL, which has traditionally been extremely closed and difficult to get things into.
Yeah, so
somehow they managed it.
So you talked about Crux, right? And Crux obviously working directly with a lot of the GSL organizations. And you just mentioned, you talked about a bunch of teams, like West teams. And then you just talked about Alice and congratulating them for getting into the Korean leagues. So why aren't the West tournament organizers working with any of these West map making teams?
Mostly because the West tournament organizers don't have anything to do with map making.
What do you mean by that? They don't have anything to do with it. They just don't know about it, or they just refuse to use them.
They just take whatever maps are popular with the players, right?
Right.
They'll take whatever's currently in use and just go with the status quo, right? I mean, that's why we've had like Cloud Kingdom in the map pool for the past year, even though it really should have been retired much earlier. Daybreak's still around. That should have been retired God knows how long ago.
Well, I mean, if they're good maps, why would we retire them? I just want your thinking on that. Like, what's your idea behind retiring a map?
Well, why should we keep a map in the map pool forever? Like, maps provide variety. They are different maps play out in different ways, promote different strategies, promote the metagame developing in a particular way. Like, Warcraft 3 had the same maps for God knows how many years, and look how boring that got very quickly. StarCraft remained alive. StarCraft Brood War remained alive for 15-ish years, purely based on the fact that we are constantly rotating in and out maps that promoted players to actually engage with the map and actually make strategic decisions. Like,
and have to relearn something.
Yeah, you're not going to promote
metagame development. I can certainly understand that, but in other communities, for instance, and Ritual attests to this too, and in Quake and in, let's say, Counter-Strike, I mean, there are maps that are constantly, I mean, they're the best maps. You just can't get around it. They're very, very good maps, and you keep using them because they are so good. And so I'm just trying to wonder, the idea behind retiring very good maps.
Let's really break this down. Like, on one hand, you have Counter-Strike, which is very much a first-person shooter, right? And a lot of that, the appeal of that game is the skill which a player can illustrate to do a particular action, right? If you go to StarCraft, a lot of that is more strategy-based and decisions players will have to make. And you can see towards the end of Wings of Liberty, people got very bored with people being able to execute the same strategies over and over again. In part, that may have been because Brood Wars was so good. But also, you could argue that it was that the maps were so boring and stagnant and promoted this really boring three-base macro style of play. And if you're not changing up that metagame, then everyone's just going to get bored and we're going to end up exactly where we were, well, 4 months ago before we had Heart of the Swarm fully out.
Yeah, no, this discussion is good because, I mean, basically the next topic I had was basically talking about the impact of maps, right, on the game and the product of viewing competitive StarCraft II. John, what's your opinion on this? I kind of want to get John and Alex's opinion.
On what specifically?
Sorry, Sigma. I don't have to tell the other John Sigma. Sigma, okay. Sigma, I'm going to have to get your... I want to get your opinion on this real quick.
I'll start off with this in that saying that I agree with Plexa on the fact that you need to have your maps consistently rotated in a very consistent time period to avoid the map stagnation that we saw, and we saw community backlash as a result of it, I believe, late last year as a result of that. And so going off of that, having that rotation of the maps, the impact is that it helps to keep the competitive scene fresh. It helps to try and alleviate these strategy ruts that we might see where it is Broodlord and Fester all the time. But if we can create an appropriate map to get players to move away from that type of strategy, then we can create not only a more exciting event for the players themselves, but in particular, a far more exciting experience for the spectators. And from my personal opinion, I think the spectator value is absolutely the number one thing that we should be shooting for, because they're the ones who ultimately drive the business and the industry. Because without them, hey, I'm just a guy sitting at a computer.
Yes. I just want to jump in there, Sigma, and just say that every time a new organization comes out with a new set of maps, like the Kesper maps, there's this overwhelming positive community response to them. And I think that really illustrates what Sigma's saying, and that the community wants to see these maps there.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's funny because, like, you talk about balance, and you know, meta and balance is tied really closely to all this, right? And I feel like part of it has to do with just the general perception of maps in the community. Right? Everybody's always talks about balance, but they never talk about the maps. They only talk about balance from an overall standpoint, right? And sometimes there's talk of maps whenever we're talking about, you know, really, really extreme cases like Steps of War and how, like, balancing would be impossible and that sort of talk. But in general, right, when we're talking, like, about David Kim, David Kim's just balancing the overall races. It's like, it doesn't even matter what the maps are in some cases. It's just the maps just have to at least have some standard to them. But the balance, you know what I mean? Like, that, it's never talked in that way. And I feel like that's actually an issue, you know, that the industry in general, or StarCraft II in general, has. And the community is actually...
I'm just going to cut you off there and say you're just wrong.
I'm wrong.
When was the last time you listened to the GSL? How often do you hear Artosis go, "Oh, Whirlwind is a great Zerg map"? How often do you hear people saying Daybreak is a great Zerg map? We always see Zerg maps picking these maps.
Sure.
There is definitely this discussion about, oh, this is a particular race's map, and that definitely, to me, tells me that they are talking about the balance of maps.
No, okay. They're not talking about balance of map. They're talking about just...
Yeah.
I don't think they're talking about that at all.
If Whirlwind is a Zerg map, then clearly that says Zerg is strong on this map.
No, but that has nothing to do with how they're balancing it, though.
The perception of it is that it doesn't always mean that that's the case.
No, what I'm saying is that when David... I feel this is kind of how I feel about it. When David's like balancing the game right now, it's just from a very high... You know, it's from a level that's supposed to just cover any kind of map right now. You know, it's a very high-level generic kind of way of trying to do it. Instead of particular cases, you know, like, you know, because you're talking about, you know, Whirlwind's of Zerg map or whatever, Daybreak is, blah, blah, blah. That's just how it ends, like, that's just how, he's just almost like talking about empirical data more so than anything else. That Zerg just ends up winning more on that map because of just the results, more so than, there's a lot of feature, you know, attributes about, you know, these maps that that might favor one or the other. You know what I mean?
That's one of the problems that Blizzard as a balancing team has to decipher. You're absolutely right when you say different maps promote different things, and that, you know, Whirlwind may promote particular strategies which are good for Zerg. And Blizzard, they do need to get an underlying balance, right? Hopefully we can all agree that there needs to be some kind of baseline balance so that we can do flexible things in maps to promote and things still turn out relatively even. And I think that's one of the challenges they have. They have to sift through all the racial variations on maps and things like that and decide whether there is actually an imbalance or if it's just a map. For instance, they quoted Cloud Kingdom as having a 70% win rate for Protoss against Terran on the ladder, but they didn't necessarily see that as an imbalance because that wasn't necessarily reflected.
That's the thing. Like, calling stuff imbalance and whatnot on each map, I feel like is premature a lot of times because there's this kind of perception on how you should play games, right? Or how you should play StarCraft 2 right now, and it's pervasive. Everybody thinks that you should play, you know, a very macro-based game, and that is, like, the way to play, right? And everybody, you know, lots of people, casters and stuff, they definitely poo-poo on any type of, you know, one-base, two-base type of play. People that do it consistently, right? And sure. So the data is actually skewed, in a way, because, you know, the perception is you're a shitty player if you play like that, so most players are not going to play like that. And when in reality a map should be judged based upon any type of play. So, you know what I mean? So like Whirlwind, for instance, right? Like, I mean, Whirlwind probably is a Zerg, but, you know, like a Zerg map, no, like from a lot of angles, but you know, you could look from the standpoint of, well, why don't Protoss just do crazy stuff? You know, like do more proxy 2 gates and do more, you know, just crazy stuff. And then we can kind of see how it really does play out. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. What you're trying to say is that we don't have enough information based off the small number of games that are played on the map to make an accurate judgment.
That's a very general way of putting it, but I feel like it's skewed, too, because of just the perception of how things should be played.
Well, then you have things like, you know, if you look at like balance statistics, then you have things like where Protoss is winning only in the early game against, you know, Zerg on a particular map because they have to do these earlier gameplays to deal with Zerg, or you have Terran only winning in the late game when they win, if they make it there. So those kind of things could be problematic, but it could also be seen as very kind of a cool thing.
Mm-hmm. I think it's problematic if every map is like that. I think it's kind of a cool thing if only that map is like that. You know, and then the next map is something completely different, right?
Well,
and then the next map is completely different.
Now you're getting into an argument, though, about map pools versus specific maps, and that's an entirely different topic altogether for you.
Well, I mean,
you're absolutely right.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's fair. Yeah.
Eventually, I want to get back to the whole tournaments in the West using.
Oh no, we're definitely getting that.
Sure. Yeah.
We're definitely getting that. But I feel like we needed to establish at least the importance of maps, you know, and what it means to the product before we get into the tournament talk. And, you know, just how to get these guys, I mean, how we get their product or, you know, their maps into these tournaments so that we can see it, or even into Blizzard's Ladder and that sort of
thing. Yeah, I definitely wanted to talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, just to finish the talk, though, you know, what do you think is the biggest problem right now in regards to I guess, the variety of maps, then? Is it just purely that there's not an infrastructure to rotate the maps enough, or do you think it's something even beyond that, which is maybe even the design of the game doesn't allow for a ton of creativity?
In the West, I think that there are... I think it's both those things, actually. I think, first and foremost, regardless of how the balance is, because take Brood War, for instance, the professional players were able to overcome those racial imbalances, and that created an extraordinarily exciting game for everyone. And it was always exciting to see one person, say, overcome just a ridiculous imbalance on a map and then go to win it. The problem, though, with StarCraft II as it exists right now in the West is that there is not an identifiable infrastructure set up for the different for the different types of production that occur that results in an overarching developed industry within the West. You have these tournaments that are trying to exist more or less independently with one another and compete with one another, but you don't have foundational bases underneath those tournaments that are helping to provide the content to them, in this particular case, maps. And so that's where our problem truly lies, I think, is just that lack of infrastructure that's been developed.
Well, it's not like we haven't tried to get infrastructure. I mean, we have map-making teams, and ESP Diamond tried to get, you know, maps into tournaments, and he was successful with, like, Testbug at 1MLG.
We've tried, but there's a hell of a lot more that we can do, I think.
I could agree with that, but to an extent, it might also be on the part of the tournaments as well, just their lack of confidence, I would assume, because in some ways, you know, we can be seen as like these scrubs that just kind of like make maps and say, here, use this, where the tournaments,
when you're saying tournaments, are you talking only the big live of tournaments like MLG and so on?
I guess mostly. For the most part.
That might be your first problem.
Not quite, because we have gotten maps successfully into smaller tournaments.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I would think you'd want to start with the smaller tournaments and start building from the base up.
We used to have original maps and play them dailies for God knows how long.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's nice. I mean,
but it just doesn't get any traction. Like,
the pros don't play in those small tournaments, and we need the pros to play on those because the big tournaments are picking maps based on the pros.
That's the biggest problem, I think. Like, if you don't get the pros to back a map, like, you know, it's going to be very hard for it to, like, do you know what I mean, take off in the eyes of the public and get tournaments to feel that they can take a risk by including it in a map pool.
No, but Richard, if they force them to play these in the tournament,
says this in every game, right, across the board. If the tournaments, take the lead and force players to do stuff, but the tournaments are in the business of making money. It's not just some altruistic thing that they do. So they're terrified about driving away players by having, shitty map pools.
They're not going to drive away. As long as you have money there, you're not going to drive away anybody.
True. In other communities, the same thing has happened. They'll pop out new maps.
Rich is actually more or less right.
That's assuming a quality level, okay? I mean, obviously, if there a bunch of shitty maps come out, and of course, you kind of ruin the game, sure, but, I mean...
It's not even just about quality, Chris, because the issue you've got is with a lot of, kind of the introduction of new maps to new games, it's one of the biggest contradictions in esports as a whole is that players, don't want change in the game, yet the games need change to be viable and move forward and have that longevity in the life. Mm-hmm. But no pro is ever going to sit down and say, wouldn't it be great if we were playing a different map every week, or so I've got to learn more stuff. Of course they don't want that. They want to learn particular set skills in set environments that they know are going to be absolute every time. And the smaller that field of knowledge they have to do, the easier it is for them to maintain their status as a pro. So when it comes to introducing new maps, the people we really need behind it are professional players. It's very hard to get them on board with it. A community will embrace change. The people at the very top that are drawing a substantial amount of money from being in a status quo position, they're not going to embrace change. And that's one of the biggest problems facing map makers, is that big tournaments don't want to drive away the players because the players don't want to have to adapt to new environments.
Mm-hmm. Richard, you're absolutely right, actually. That is a huge part of it. And
the players are big wussies. In a lot of ways.
Not even that. Like, you look at DreamHack, I think it was Stockholm last year, they introduced two new maps into the map pool. It was Vicious, which was one of Alex's maps. Oh, no, that was that yours, Alec, or Prodigy?
That was Prodigy's. And then
you had the Frigid Pass was your one, yeah.
Yes.
They introduced those two maps into the tournament. And because the tournament was a loser's pick format, basically no pro ever chose those maps to play on. Because, where was the incentive to waste time learning this map for this one tournament that will probably never be used anywhere else? And I think that's just a real illustration of what Rich is saying, in that the pro players aren't going to want to waste time learning these maps if they're ever going to be used once or twice. And they don't want to waste time learning 50 maps every season. It's just, it's unfair on the players.
Well, I mean, look what's happening in Kespa. Then what's happening in Kespa then? I mean, we're seeing a rotation of maps.
Yes.
And the players have to play those maps.
Yes, but the difference between us and Kespa is that Kespa's got a very controlled environment, and that they're not changing all the maps every season. They'll change one or two.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's good enough. And in a Kespa environment, they can do that because all their players are contracted to play in Kespa, right? And so there's this incentive to have to learn these new maps because that's the tournament they're involved in.
Yeah.
But when you have three or four major organizations trying to host tournaments more or less independently of each other, there's no incentive to do that, right? Like, the best shot we have at getting any new maps into the tournament pool is through WCS, and that even poses a whole set of new limitations because we have to work with Blizzard, and they have their own. And they have their own set of weird rules that will... that stifle creativity.
Well, I mean,
let's be honest about it. Blizzard is the big kid in the schoolyard with a stick, and we're the little itty bitty kids getting beat up every recess. That's just how it is.
Well, I mean, you'll never be able to get away from Blizzard. I mean, right? Blizzard owns the IP. You'll never get away from Blizzard. So
sure.
Yeah, but I think there's a massive difference here. Say, like with the Warcraft community. It felt a lot more like modders and people that were creating content were much more embraced by Blizzard. They were given the tools to go nuts, you know, create whatever you want, create Mario Kart, versions. Or we don't care. Just do whatever you want. And if it's really cool and it takes off, we're going to proactively promote it. And, you know, Dota, the original Dota, obviously was born from that. You know, which again, considering the original Dota was, of course, a StarCraft map to begin with, and it never really took off in that environment, probably speaks volumes. I don't get why they're so precious about one particular title. It doesn't seem to be a company-wide ethos, is what I'm saying. It doesn't seem to apply to all of their games. But when it comes to StarCraft, it seems incredibly difficult for people that are creating custom content to bypass this legislature and all of this nonsense that's put in the way of them.
It's because it's a business now. I mean, this is. It's an esport now, right? And before it was more community based, right? Whether it was UMS or it was even we're talking Melee.
I want to go back to what Richard was saying about the custom map community, and well, Blizzard do care about that in StarCraft 2. It's just that their arcade launched it wasn't exactly successful, and that really hurt the development of that scene. And so far as getting Melee maps into tournament pools, like. Well, as we've already mentioned, that they just didn't have the kind of infrastructure to bring maps through to Warcraft 3 tournaments, right? And that lack of structure is kind of carried over to StarCraft 2.
Yeah. And
they've been playing catch-up, basically. They're putting work into it, but it's still slow.
I mean, just
I don't want to... Sorry, I was just going to say, I don't want to bring Valve to the table, especially when we're talking about Blizzard, because I know that gets a few people hot under the collar. Just to point out about a Valve initiative that's going on, I'm sure the map makers will have looked at it and you know, fingers crossed, Blizzard do something similar. But in CS:GO and indeed in other titles, they've got this thing called this Operation Payback, where it's basically custom map makers are given all the tools, everything they need to create the content. They get to upload the content to their kind of shop or whatever you want to call it. People can vote on how popular it is, and the five most popular maps get put into a subscription pack that people pay for, the money being evenly distributed between the makers of the maps and a little bit for Valve as well. And then those people who bought those maps have access to special reserved servers where you can only play on those maps on those servers. And you can invite friends onto it if you've bought it, so they can check out the map and see whether they want to purchase it as well. Now, this
great idea.
Sounds nice, doesn't it?
That's a fantastic idea.
Doesn't this sound strikingly similar to what they told us the arcade was going to be like?
The arcade was supposed to be almost like, I don't know, almost like a mobile kind of store, you know? Like, that's kind of how it's structured right now, except for there's just no paying, you know, there's no monetization involved in it right now.
That was part of the plan, though, at one point.
Yeah, it was, but obviously it's not as high a priority right now as it is. As it once was, but
UMS. What I was saying was, Valve, obviously, with that initiative, they understand that a game... And I've always said this, maps are, whether we want to accept it or not, they're pretty much the lifeblood of the game, because the engine isn't going to change, and obviously it's going to get patched, but eventually there's going to come a point where we're going to hit balance, we're going to hit tipping point where tinkering with it's actually going to do it more harm than good. Every game wants to achieve that equilibrium. And it's only when you add new content do you need to start thinking about repatching it again. So it's the maps that give longevity to a game. It's the maps that, you know, turn a game from being, say, a Call of Duty compulsory annual purchase to being a game where you can still be playing it 10 years down the line. But the problem that we've had in other titles, again, to use the Counter-Strike analogy, is that they've been reduced to playing the same five maps for 10 fucking years, man. And they're bored. You know, the pros are bored. Everyone's bored. And it's like... Valve are starting to realize, wow, if we want this game to really have that longevity now, we need to start embracing these changes, and we need to incentivize and monetize the map makers who are going to be the people that effectively add years onto the game rather than months, you know?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so incentivizing the map makers and that whole bit, I think, sure, is something that's like end goal, but long, long ways away. I mean, I think that but some of the things that we really, really need to talk about is even getting some kind of structure in place right now, right? There's, like, really nothing for them. I mean, Jesse, Plexa, like, mentioned it in his intro, which was that the only thing that the West has right now is TLMC for these guys to even get their maps even any kind of exposure. And it's not even guaranteed to even make it in Blizzard's ladder.
Why not make it? I guess that why not do it yourselves?
Yeah,
why
I mean, that's something we can talk about.
Why rely on other people to promote your product?
We try. We have followers. That. I have like 46 followers on Twitter. You know, no one cares. No one checks the custom forms in Team Liquid. No one upvotes on Reddit. I mean,
you know, this show alone is a start, right? I mean, about reaching?
You have a point, right? This is exactly what ESV tried to do, and they still got very little traction. Bad experience with MLG, and that was it.
But what I'm saying is maybe their approach was not the right approach, in that maybe they were going straight. They were thinking right off the bat, my maps are awesome. I'm gonna take it straight to the top.
I feel like Diamond.
They held their own tournament on the Korean server, played with the Korean pros for many months.
Right,
and even with that rigorous testing behind them and the evidence that their maps were good, there was still no uptake and still no very, very little discussion either.
Do you know at all how they approached?
That's the thing. Like, I mean, Diamond. I kind of know Diamond offline, but
that's your best approach.
Yeah, it obviously Diamond was leading that, right? Obviously, because he was heading up ESV at the time, and. I don't know for a fact, but I know I've definitely talked to a lot of people, like, so just around this whole map making thing, and I think Diamond just rubs some people the wrong way, you know, too. So it might not definitely. I definitely agree with you that they were kind of positioned in a right, definitely the right way, given that they had data to kind of show, right, with their tournaments and Korean players for that matter playing it and having some success with it, but. Yeah, you know, sometimes it has to do with who it is, right? Who your leader is, right?
I think it's probably worth pointing out at this point that Diamond, I don't think he's ever touched the editor, and if he has, not in any significant way, just the upload maps, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that a lot of the mapping organizations lack, is someone with that kind of knowledge and with that kind of expertise to be able to take them from just a map-making team into a legitimate map-making entity, if you know what I mean.
But are we in that state? I mean, are we in a position right now with the current state of that to even think about organizations? You know, like,
well,
there's not even any respect for it yet. So why are we even organizing?
We're getting from John here, isn't it, that you need this legitimization before you can get anywhere. And, well, perhaps he's right. And I'm sure all the mapping teams could use with someone specifically to know. Yeah, sure, go, Sigma.
I'll put it to you this way. Absolutely, we need organization, and we need people on these teams who are willing to step up and say, I'm not just going to be a mapper, I'm going to be the guy who's sending out 20 emails a day, I'm going to be trying to meet people on a regular basis and making contact, even if it takes 2 or 3 months to get a response back from a tournament. If you do get that response back, then you know at the very least that they saw it and that they're aware of the fact that you exist. And then you build from there, and you just keep relationship building and building and building. And you start out small. You work with small tournaments. You get your maps there, so you get some statistics behind you. You get some testing out of it. You get to look for flaws and issues. And quite frankly, to date, I do not think any map team other than ESV has been more appropriately positioned in order to capitalize on what they had going for them. And I don't know what happened, because I don't know the internal strife that occurred within ESV, but I think it's a real shame that they weren't able to take it to that next level and establish the relationships with not only small tournaments, but with premier level tournaments in order to get their maps that much further out there and that much more into the public eye. So, I mean, you got to have those leaders, and you got to develop.
I mean,
that.
They obviously they certainly did have an opportunity, but again, I think that maybe in their case it was a matter of approach.
Well, Alec, you were on ESV.
That held them back.
Alec, you're on ESV. Yes. Why don't you tell? I mean, what do you know? Why didn't ESV succeed in this?
As far as I know, it just kind of died because of oversaturation. You know, that whole talk about oversaturation in the community. It wasn't really gaining anywhere. It wasn't doing anything for us. It wasn't putting us in a better position with the tournaments, essentially. So I guess it was just something that Diamond just didn't want to do. I don't know exact reasons, but I guess he just didn't want to continue it. I mean, he just kind of came out and outright said it's dead. It's not really functioning as I want it to.
And the biggest problem is that everybody was, you know, kind of, you know, looking at you guys as the leaders and the people that were going to kind of pave the way for all this. And then, you know, I think when Diamonds probably said that, like, all of you guys just kind of completely stopped for all of you guys, right? I mean,
yeah, well, I mean, even if it did continue, I think to an extent we can't do it ourselves. I mean, we need, like, if we're the only ones going to tournaments saying we want maps, it's very easy to ignore us. Like, I mean, obviously, we're the map makers. We're biased in the sense that we want our maps being played on. I mean, that's just kind of how it goes. But if we have a whole community, if we have thousands of people saying, hey, I saw this map on this smaller tournament, and I really liked watching the games on it, and, you know, they all went to MLG or NASL or whatever and said, hey, get this map in the map pool, despite whether the pros really, you know, like it or not.
I mean, look what's happening to Ryan at GameHard. You know, and originally, I was going to have Ryan on this show just to kind of parallel this, but obviously, we had him on last week. I mean, it's a similar thing with him, you know, given that, you know, it's kind of started, I think, just with a few people using his, I mean, just his product.
Like, organically,
even,
it started.
Yeah,
organic.
Even pre-Game Heart, right? Yeah. But even going into Game Heart, it's kind of snowballed for him, right?
There's one important difference between the situation and Game Heart, that with Game Heart, there really isn't another alternative. It's him or the standard interface, basically. For the Western mapping community, we have to compete against Korea and the framework and testing that offers. And if a tournament was looking to introduce a new map, do they choose a Western mapper just because they're Western, or do they pick a Kesper map, which the community seems really positive about and has got some pro-testing behind it? And that creates an even further deterrent to getting any kind of Western mapping progress.
Yeah, but that doesn't... I mean, the big tournaments, I totally agree with you, Jesse. But that doesn't stop you from trying to at least get I mean, it's just a matter of relationship sometimes, right? I mean, it's this generalization is, you know, for the most part, probably right. But there are going to be a few of those people that are willing to try. And that's what you need those
people. For instance,
people,
if I was going to run a tournament right now, you know, and honestly, I didn't know. I was relying on the admins that knew StarCraft a lot better than I. And I would always just say, okay, well, let's make sure we get a map pool that's, you know, kind of approved or whatever. And we would always just end up going with like an MLG map pool or whatever was out there. But I'm all about, you know, running tournaments in which you introduce at least one, you know, you mix it up with, you know, at least one new map that players are kind of, you know, at some point are going to be forced to play. But I was not aware, and this goes back, I was really not aware of this map making community. And so maybe that's initially part of the problem is it's again, the message is just not getting out maybe in the way that it should be. Not that you guys aren't trying. It's just there may need to be a different approach to get the message out. It may be like what Chris is saying, where you create very solid relationships with people that are running events. And if I run an event from this point forward, I'm coming to you guys and saying, "Hey, let's introduce a new map into the map pool." But that's now because I know who you guys are, and I think it's great to introduce new maps, regardless of what the pros say, and I'm all about it. And I know there other tournaments out there that are willing to do that, willing to make that leap. I just think maybe the approach was starting at the top, which is the most mm-hmm. difficult part to start at, mm-hmm. as opposed to starting at the bottom and just seeing if you can kind of work your way up.
I think the biggest tragedy, though, John, is that the map makers have to drive it at all, because culturally, we've seen so many changes in gaming and the mechanics and how it all works. You know, we live in an era of DLC, microtransactions, expansion packs, you know, all of that stuff. And that's all out there now. And you know, for me, how it works in almost every other game, and this is one of the areas where I think StarCraft II is very unique, would be that what would happen is you would download a DLC map pack, which you would pay for. Obviously, the money would go to the people that have created that content. Then it's out there. It's out mm-hmm. there. People who've paid it have got it on their servers. People are playing it. And then the discussion about whether that map is competitive, viably competitive, happens organically. You don't need to go banging the drum, you know. And I think it's awful that the people who are creating this content are having to go to anyone at all and saying, "Hey, will you just play our map? Will you just try it?"
True,
it
would be a lot better if
there was some sort of injection system where the map instantly goes to the players en masse. And then it's like you guys decide what you want to do with it, and the map maker can just sit back and use that as a barometer for what should I do for my next map, you know?
Yeah, well Richard, that's like the utopian of this opportunity. I mean, that we know that that would like be the best opportunity.
But
you and I both know that in the past it really was. I mean, when Quake and Counter-Strike, the community is what drove changes, and so there has to be a way for this to happen. Because it's happened before, and we know that it can. I guess at this point, we have to kind of deal with what we have, and that is that we don't have that optimal, you know, situation for the map makers. Mm-hmm. So we maybe have to find a way, a different way at this point, to try to get their message out, get their maps in front of tournaments and things like that. But, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, that would be, like, optimal for them and for the community.
I mean, there's
a lot. Sorry, go on, Chris.
This problem is, you know, it's multi-tiered, okay? I mean, you know, working on the community side of it and really changing, you know, the perception of the importance of maps and map makers is one thing that we need to work on. Providing a system, like kind of what you were saying, some injection system, and, you know, for these maps to actually get in and played is another issue, right, that has to be worked mm-hmm. on, as well as this whole, you know, the business side of it, too. I mean, these things are all completely different. I mean, they're...
It's happening in other games right now, and this must be the frustration for a StarCraft II map maker. You know that if you were making a map in almost any other game, the system I'm talking about would be happening. And you know, here's the thing, right? Communities in gaming, they're not very, you know, and this is a generalization, obviously, but they're not very forward thinking, okay? And like we talked about just earlier in the show, maps give longevity to a game. No one who plays the game currently is thinking about the longevity. No one's thinking about, is it still going to be viable to play it in 2 years? You know, we got another expansion to come, you know, but what's going to happen after that? And are we still going to be playing this in 8 years, 10 years? No one really thinks about that. You think about the here and now. And the trouble for map makers is because what they do is tied to that longevity and the thing the community aren't thinking about, you then can't just hand over the maps to the community and be like, "Guys, we really need some new maps, yeah? You all complain about this." And they go, yeah, we'll totally upvote it on Reddit and stuff. Oh, look, there's a picture of Artosis in a wig or something, you know? And it's like, you know, you can't rely on those guys.
Sure.
And the map makers can only do so much because, you know, they've got to create the map, drive it forward. And the only way it's going to happen is, like I say, if it's just there, it's like, you know, that baby that's abandoned on your doorstep is just there in a basket. And you've got to deal with it. You've got to call somebody, feed it, you know, whatever, right? It's a terrible example. You can tell I'm from a very poor area, given that as an example. But you know what I mean, right? Like, you know, it's just there, and you've got to deal deal with it. And once it's there and you've got to deal with it, that's what brings about the sensible discussions. And that's what I mean. I totally feel these guys' pain, like, completely.
Well, yeah. There's probably a situation that you guys aren't aware of. And this kind of ties into what John was saying about just getting it in small tournaments. The thing is, we've had very big tournaments be very accepting towards MAP, and there still hasn't been an uptake. I brought up DreamHack before, but an even better example is IPL. They ran their own MAP competition. They brought their own maps into IPL. And even though they took a bit of heat from that, from the players, like, oh, we don't want to play this map, it's terrible, it's imbalanced, whatever, they stuck with those maps and actively tried to promote those maps and tried to get more use out of them. The result? No uptake.
But it takes time. No, it takes continued consistency before the community will pick it.
And that's not true, though, Jesse. The uptake out of that particular tournament would have been Dreamforge's Atlas map that did get injected into GSDL and then GSL from there.
Yeah. Mm. I was just thinking of the first IPL map contest. Sorry.
Okay. In that particular regard, though, you have to keep in consideration the fact that that effort was largely driven by one or two people within IPL organization, specifically Tim Frazier. He was in the chat with us just constantly trying to get IPL at the time excited about putting on these map tournaments.
He's not the only person that has tried to do this as well. We also had... NASL get in behind the map making community and try to actively promote maps, had a working relationship with TPW. And even though you have these relatively high up people trying to make an impact, you're still not seeing much of an uptake, Atlas being the exception.
Do you think maybe the approach should be more towards the players or the casters? Those that have kind of those that can create a following for something, a perception of something.
The answer unfortunately lies with Blizzard.
It does have a lot to do with Blizzard, and it's because they can influence. It's kind of an attitude towards the maps. I mean, I feel like
how does a map get used, right? Either all the tournaments decide to unanimously take them up. That's obviously not happening. Or the maps get put into the ladder, and they're deemed acceptable for tournament use, as was Cloud Kingdom and Ohana. And we've really given this tournament uptake a real shot. It hasn't really worked, and I think we really have to start putting some pressure on Blizzard to say, hey, look, you guys do need to bear this responsibility, because at the moment they don't know if they should bear this responsibility. It's all up in the air for them. They're still trying to internally work this out, and I think probably the community put a bit of pressure on them to say, look, Blizzard, this is your game. If you don't want this to die in 5 years, you need to seriously get your shit together and work out some infrastructure to make this happen.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at. It's an attitude towards maps in general that the community has. And I'm not talking about, like, just you guys. Like, the map-making community goes to Blizzard, they don't care. Like, you guys aren't big enough numbers, right? And for me, I feel like maps right now, this is kind of a little bit extreme kind of take on it, but I think they just think of maps as just settings. I mean, it's no different than you take a picture with a different background. You know what I mean? It's changing backgrounds. It's more so like that than actually being so, it's such a huge factor in really having a game reach its top potential. People don't look at it like that. You know, what I just said there, they're not looking at maps like actually bringing StarCraft 2 to some, you know, even higher level than it is right now. They just think it's just another map that's a different color, that maybe it's an island versus like in space. And I mean, am I totally false in saying that?
Yeah, you're off. I actually forwarded an email to Alec 2 days ago, or maybe it was yesterday.
Okay.
Yesterday?
From David. Yeah. Yesterday, yeah. From David, pretty much laying out that he does realize the importance of maps, and that...
Well, that's good that he does, but does the rest of the community feel like that right now?
Does the community? I don't know.
Because you're talking about Blizzard, you're talking about David. Sure, that's great, but...
Always interesting. You never know what the community thinks, right?
Yeah, but you're telling me that you need the community to, like, pressure Blizzard into that. So
Well, if they want to see the Western map-making scene really take off, or even get any kind of semblance of structure, or get some proper map rotation, all this lovely stuff, then the pressure needs to go on Blizzard to say, hey, look, you guys need to take responsibility for this. That's basically what I'm saying to that.
I think it speaks volumes as well about the number of people that are in a position to really give this a push. You know, there's a number of casters that could do it. There's certainly a lot of kind of, you know, commentators. Oh, seriously, yes, you know, I see tournaments, you know, getting organized all the time. No one ever, I mean, outside of the Team Liquid map, you know, making contest, there's no one really giving it a push and being a vocal champion. There's no one that's, you know, really taking the fight of Blizzard and using their leverage for the good of the map-making community. I just think it speaks volumes about, you know, some of the characters we've got in the StarCraft II community that, you know, they could actually do something positive that would, you know, have, like, ongoing benefits for the game, like, and the game's longevity, but, you know,
I mean, imagine,
they don't seem to be that interested in it.
Yeah, imagine if, like, imagine if Total Biscuit got on board with this. You mm-hmm. think it would happen pretty quickly?
Mm-hmm. He's too busy developing the US US pro scene, which Blizzard horribly failed to do.
Yeah, but still,
he's
the point is like, what if if you got one of these guys to, you know, that's kind of the point of me doing this show with you guys is that, you know, I just hopefully we can reach some more people that can help with this because, you know, I'm definitely not Total Biscuit or any of those guys that have like giant influence like that. But if one of those guys hop on board with you guys, then what you guys want with like influencing Blizzard and that sort of thing will probably happen much quicker. And I think you're absolutely right, Richard. Like, there should be more people that hop on this. I mean,
it's just a sad reality. Unfortunately, again, because of the nature of what map making is and what it does for the game and how, you know, how the various models in which map making can kind of interact with any gaming community, it's very hard to get anybody to really champion that cause because everyone in esports pretty much acts, you know, with a what's in it for me kind of angle. And the only thing you would really get out of championing the map makers would be, you know, I was the guy who championed the map makers. I mean, and unfortunately to a lot of people that are driven by, you know, profit and other motivations, that's just not going to cut it. And it's just a shame.
I think to an extent, I think most of the casters agreeably love the game. I mean, you can't go to our coaches and say you don't love the game, so you don't want to see it go on. So, I mean, if you say, hey, if you do this, you'll see the game go on for another 5 years, 10 years, much like what Brood War did. They would probably be on board just for the sake of that, rather than just paying.
But then again, then we get into the realm of how much of their time are they willing to give up for that passion when they've got all these other projects going on. It's like, okay, I'm going out to do this tournament here. I'm going to cast DreamHack there, whatever it is. I got all these other commitments. When am I going to really have the time to sit down and start harping on about it?
Alex is trying to say is that. Artosis can use his influence to help
generate
some momentum within the community.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I agree. I'd love to see him do it. And not to put all the pressure on him because
he doesn't have to actively come out and support the map-making scene and actively get on a grassroots level and run tournaments or anything, but even just a few words in a tweet, that actually goes quite a long way for us.
Oh, even just like going on meta and just explaining that how important maps and just really talking in depth, you know, on a particular map, whatever it is, how it affects the game. I mean, he knows the game well enough that he knows how maps affect it. But, you know, actually just explicitly going through that process with the general community, that goes such a long way as to influencing or changing or shifting how the entire community views the importance of maps. And, you know, that's what we need. I mean, we need more of that. And, you know, hopefully we'll see more of it, but you know, definitely one thing I want to do, and kind of addressing again, Jesse, like your point where, you know, we had IPL kind of on board, we had NASL on board, and I know it seems like, you know, you guys, you know, kind of went that extra mile and did that, but I'm telling you, sometimes it takes another mile of the same thing happening, another like a year of that happening before it actually kicks in, and I mean, it's at least something that you can do, right, to bridge this. I mean, it's better than just sitting around waiting for Blizzard, right? I mean,
and absolutely, you're right about that, Chris. Part of the problem that I think we face right now is that with what the map community felt was almost the downfall of ESV at the time, we felt like, well, there's no real leader in here anymore to help direct us. Where do we go from here? And then you had the Planetary Workshop, and they're still producing, but all of a sudden North American Star League isn't putting out their maps anymore, and so they're not getting exposure. And so we do need to have that reinvigoration within our own small community, where we are constantly reaching out and trying to reach people of all levels, of all different types, to try and get the exposure of what we can provide for them. And here, the sad truth of the matter is that we're providing a service for absolutely free. You know, it goes back to the esports community. A lot of people are like, well, what's in it for me? Well, hello, gang, you're getting freaking free maps out of us. You're getting free content, free work. You know, just to kind of put that into perspective for you, I ran a few numbers today where I took the United States median graphic designer salary, which is about $47,000 annually. All right. And then to keep it conservative, I've lowered it down to $20. And even though I believe most maps take 40 hours of work to get them to a point where they are ready for competition, I lowered that even further down to 20 hours at $20. And that brings us to about $100,000 or so of competition maps that have been produced. And if you think I'm lying, go to sc2melee.net and I guarantee you will see the most ridiculous amount of maps ready, and probably the top 100 of which at least are tournament ready. And it's just a matter of, we are providing this service, we're providing it for free. It's just a matter of trying to get that exposure, develop those relationships, and get our content out to the people who need it and who want it. So
just
we're ready.
A question for the map makers, yeah? Like, how much do you think the reason why maybe Blizzard, say, aren't on board in the same way is, like, maybe a pride thing? Like, they want it all to be official and done through their own internal map-making team rather than saying, you know what, the community make the best maps.
Why is their map team not making better maps then?
Yeah.
No, I guess that's a question.
Single player mappers, not melee mappers. That's why.
What's interesting is that, like, given what you said there, John Sigma, is that they don't even need a map team, given that the content's already there, right? I mean...
Yeah, but that's what I'd be thinking. If I was running a game and there was a community out there making, you know, let's say the maps are good. Let's say, like, you know, what John's saying about, you know, that there's 100 competition-ready maps out there to grab. You know, well, why am I paying a map-making team? Especially if they're on a go slow. You know, like, what's the point? I'd save myself some money.
I think it's a pride thing, too. I think it's a pride thing.
Yeah, that's what I agree with you. It's like, if it isn't Blizzard, you know, if it isn't a Blizzard thing, it's not...
Like, we understand the game better, so when we make maps, they're going to be better. And it's been proven that that's not the case in almost in so many games.
My understanding is that their melee mapping team is the same team that create their campaign maps. And that's why they exist.
Oh, brother. Wow, that's crazy.
Fine, let's be clear, because Blizzard needs to have their development team. They absolutely need that. But they have an opportunity to seize on people whose sole devotion, pretty much, within the community, is to produce free content for them. Why would you not capitalize on that? And to answer your question, Richard, as to why you would monetarily incentivize a map team, it's because you're not simply getting a one-time piece of content. It's because you're getting repeated pieces of content. Yeah. You're getting repeated reviews. You're getting 24, 48-hour turnaround fixes, hot fixes to maps that demonstrate errors within tournaments. That's why you monetarily incentivize a map team, not because of the one-time contribution.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that's the point I wanted you to make, because, you know, like, I definitely think the situation we've got at the moment is, you know, we're at this kind of tipping point almost. You know, like, it feels like there is a genuine need for kind of more maps now, but it feels like what the process we're going to have to go through is, it almost feels like you're going to have to get this push from Blizzard, like some huge endorsement where they're going to do something very out of character and kind of, like, you know, push your guys' content, or you guys are going to have to somehow give them feedback for ideas, and we're going to have to wait for them to create the maps.
I think
it doesn't feel like anything's going to happen with any expediency, even though it feels like the time is right for it to happen.
Yeah,
not unless Blizzard steps up and decides to make a change, then it could.
Well, it's not even really the right time to see it happen because, you know, like we said earlier, maps change at the metagame, they make things new. But Heart of the Swarm just came out. Heart of the Swarm is doing that for us. The metagame isn't stale right now. We could be using the same Wings of Liberty map pool that when it was super stale, and the game would still be different. So in order for a ripe situation for, like, a serious, like, crisis to be calling, you know, Legacy of the Void has to be out. It has to have been out for a couple of years, and the metagame has to be super stale. That's when people are like, okay, now is maps. But obviously,
we don't want to end up like that, Alec.
Yeah, exactly.
Waiting until then is really bad because then we don't have infrastructure, then we don't have experience, then we don't have things set up and good to go. So doing it sooner than later is obviously better. But, I mean, we have things working against us right now.
That's absolutely, that's absolutely right. And, you know, what you said there, Richard, I think it's the latter. I mean, I think these guys, they have to do something. You know, Blizzard is not going to do anything on their own, right? So it's going to take a lot of whatever, providing even more data and convincing the community and that sort of thing to actually get them in position. Because they're going to be the last people that do something, in my opinion.
That's not quite true. They did reach out to us to host TLMC, not the other way around.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Okay.
And like I said before, it's not that Blizzard doesn't appreciate there's a problem. They don't quite know how to solve it.
Yeah, because I think they still... I mean, like, I've talked to Cloakin before. I mean, I think they still think of it as, you know, a more of a community type of thing. So, you know, if you guys want to do maps, then, you know, we give you the tools to make maps. And it's great, and you can enjoy them, and that sort of thing. But it's not at the level of necessarily integrating it into their product. Even though they have taken some of the community maps, they have. So I'll, you know, definitely credit them for that. But I feel like their kind of attitude is still in that fashion. And I know, I mean, I kind of know firsthand because I've talked to, you know, some of the community folks, and you know, they definitely have different priorities right now, right? And when it comes to maps, I think it's still more of a community thing in their eyes.
You might be right.
But you mentioned to David. You mentioned...
Sure. It's very difficult to know what really does go on in there sometimes. I'm sure we can all attest to that.
Okay, so I wanted to bring up one thing to see what y'all's opinion is. What do y'all think about, you know, the ladder map pool being generally what a lot of the tournament, at least the non-Korean tournament, map pools are based on?
I don't like how Blizzard's approach is, like, you know, esports ladder pools should be ladder map pools. I mean, it's cool, and I really like their standpoint being like, you know, it's really cool to play on the maps that the pros are playing on, but at the same time, the pros are at a much different level than new players. You know, like, Blizzard doesn't want to, you know, introduce things such as, like, half bases, like we originally saw in Daybreak, or they don't want to do weird things like stacking rocks on top of each other, or high-yield gases, or using minerals to block pathways instead of rocks. They don't want to do those kind of crazy things because it's confusing to the new players. But if that was in the pro scene, that would be okay, because the pros, they pick up on that stuff very quickly, and it adds dynamics to the pro scene that would be appropriate to the scene, rather than just having some you know, new players trying to have to learn all this crazy stuff. So, I mean... that's a factor, I think.
Sigma, I saw your face whenever I brought this.
You know, I'll address this. I sent out a few emails to a couple of tournaments, and they were mostly small tournaments because that's still where I'm building from right now. But within those emails, I specifically said, "Heart of the Swarm just came out. A lot of tournaments," and I was sending these out before Heart of the Swarm came out, "a lot of early tournaments in Heart of the Swarm are going to consist of either pre-existing tournament maps or of the Blizzard ladder maps." And that's fine from a business standpoint for the first 3 months. After that, what in the Sam hell are you doing? You have options available to you that will give your product a much higher quality, you know, talk to us, we'll help you. You know, I didn't phrase it that way, obviously, but so.
Well, I mean, from the infrastructure, I mean, it's kind of an infrastructure issue, even with the player pool, right? Because if it's not on the ladder and so much practice is based on the ladder right now, then, you know, I guess how do these players end up practicing, right?
Is it an insane thing to suggest that, like, you could have the maps go into the unranked and then, you know, the ones that prove popular get promoted
that's too
up
insane,
into
man.
The...
That's too insane.
One idea I did come up with was that you'd have the more complex ideas, like half bases, mineral blocks, rocks on top of each other in the ranked ladder, because that's where the tournament scene... It's supposed to feel like the tournament scene, per se. Where the unranked ladder is where the new players would play, they would get used to the multiplayer, they would understand the game, and then they go to the ranked ladder and discover all these kind of like new map mechanics, as well as things like that.
I will say this. I think currently that Blizzard and a lot of the proponents that work in conjunction with Blizzard, I think they underestimate the game intellect that their players have when it comes to being able to deal with these maps. Quite frankly, I have a 10-year-old cousin who's smarter than a whip, could probably kick my ass at StarCraft, and he'd be able to do it on a map that he's never even played before. So, you know, it's like, recognize the intellect of the audience that you're working towards. And when you're making a game specifically for esports that has as high of a competitive level and edge to it as StarCraft does, there's going to be a lot of people who are just flat out capable of dealing with whatever you throw at them. Give them the opportunity to do it. I guarantee you they won't disappoint. They might even surprise you with some new tricks.
This is actually kind of interesting because I have the opposite opinion to Alec and Sigma.
That's why I have Jesse on here, man.
But you're the administrator of Team Liquid.
I am an administrator. I don't make maps. I have made maps under a Smurf, and I challenge you to go find them. Good luck. But I am not a map maker. But I am passionate about maps, and I have been for a long time. And Team Liquid has tried to organize things on a very high level to try and coordinate something between tournaments, and I've seen how fruitless that endeavor is. And that, in conjunction with the fact that Chris does have a point in that a lot of players do practice on the ladder. This isn't Korea. We don't have team houses where people can easily train with each other and give feedback. A lot of the practice still happens on the ladder. And from my point of view, I think the ladder is an effective way to change maps, given that Blizzard are willing to take in and consider maps such as through the TLMC. And I hope that we'll be able to continue the TLMC forward into successive seasons, and hopefully we can keep the ladder map pool fresh, updated, and with high-quality Western maps, and possibly Koreans if it comes to that as well.
Okay.
I don't see a more effective way of introducing maps into the tournament scene without a huge problem of bringing all these tournaments together, particularly when a lot of these tournaments are already bundled with WCS, which is so heavily involved, or which is so heavily tied to Blizzard.
So I
challenge Alec or Sigma or anyone to tell me how better you could do it than through the ladder.
Well, what do you guys think?
I don't think you could. I don't think you could.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, I don't think you could too, but I think that's the hardest thing to do though, right? I mean...
Well,
to achieve.
That's why I'm doing what I'm doing, right?
Yeah, it is.
I'm trying, and we're trying to make progress in that front.
No, I mean, and it's great. I mean, I don't want to... Definitely not saying anything bad about what you're doing, man, for sure.
It's not perfect. We have a lot of ways to go. We haven't got anything in concrete. We're not... The maps haven't been rotated and yada, 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 but we're taking steps at a time, right? And I think this TLMC will hopefully be a step forward for that.
It just feels to me, though, like, again, so since the introduction of unranked play, you know, why can't that...
Richard, your point about the ladder and how you can test maps on the ladder is absolutely valid. The problem
is
it requires the ladder to be rewritten.
Yeah, No, I get that. It just, it feels like, you know, everything's pointing to this kind of set way to do things. You know, it's like the common sense approach would be no one's going to want to take risks when something's at stake. And I, you know, obviously some people do take ladder play very seriously. I'm not a ladder player myself. I've seen the screenshots of the things people say to each other. I happily quit ladder play in beta. So there you go. But obviously people take it seriously is what I'm saying. And I think there's a very important part of that where it does need to emulate the pro experience. There needs to be this uniformity. But now we've got unranked, which can be one big fucking playground. We can do whatever we want with it. So why can't we introduce all of this cool shit and then just see what takes off? You know, that would be the way to get exactly what you're talking about, Chester.
With one problem that unranked and ranked are linked at the moment. So
yeah, they're
unranked
definitely.
Will play ranked. But outside of that limitation, you're absolutely right. They could do this. There's a whole bunch of other great things they could do to promote competitive play as well, but they're not doing those either.
Yeah. True. It's getting a little harder too, going that model. I mean, I think I totally agree with you, Richard. It's just things like Shoutcraft America being based on the ladder ranking now, and I mean things like that are going to make it even harder to really de-emphasize the ladder. And I think we should, you know, I totally agree with what you're saying there too. Is that they should be separated, you know, right now, and that would actually be a decent solution. So TLMC, go ahead, Richard.
I was just going to say, like, you know, it's so, I can't believe a company like Blizzard can't think constructively about, you know, if you're going to create an unranked thing. I didn't even realize, I mean, like, you know, obviously all these shows are educational, but I didn't even realize it was still linked in that way. Because why would it be?
Richard, you're probably not aware of this, but the Brood War community had external ladders that weren't run by Blizzard Blizzard kind of messed it up pretty bad. And when you brought up earlier that players don't like playing new things, and we saw that in Brood War. They played the same map over and over again. But on this custom hardcore ladder where all the pros played, they basically had a system of map of the week. And if you played on the maps of the week, you got extra points. And they just changed these every 2 weeks, and suddenly everyone's playing every map because it's map of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be an incredibly... Nice. Like, you just take the Masters League and above, create some system like that, and instantly you've got people playing all the maps.
But
the problem from my point of view is I'd love to run an external ladder that was separate from the in-game ladder that you could control a little bit more. I'd love to be able to do that, but I'll tell you right now, I mean, we're getting the company I'm working with now is getting ready to roll out ladders, but getting them to play on ladders, because outside of a ladder like for StarCraft II, ladders in general are just considered like just garbage matches, you know, and a lot of people don't play that.
Ladder would have to work in conjunction with Blizzard, and that Blizzard would have to take active steps to make it a better place. But I think that's probably, you could do an entire show on that, on the improvements to the StarCraft II ladder.
So I kind of want to transition to TLMC because, you know, we've obviously brought it up a lot. And, you know, TLMC is literally, for the map making community, I feel like it is the news, like these first two, right? And I kind of want to get a sense of how often are we going to be seeing this every year? And what is the end result? Like, what's the prize at the end so that folks that don't know anything about it can know?
Oh, well. I guess I can say some new things. All right.
Announcements, maybe.
Yeah. We've been trying to negotiate prize for a while, and I think we've settled on.
Prize? All right. I mean, money? Monetary prize, or?
They might be able to supply some extra hardware, but I've worked out that we can probably offer a $300 prize for the whole thing, a split between the two compositions. I mean, it's not a lot, but it's a first step, right? Hopefully we can build on that moving forward.
What about placement, though?
What do you mean by placement? How often?
No, just placement of the winning maps.
Oh, yeah, I'll probably be 100 for first, 50 for second in each of the two categories that we have.
Wait, what was that?
Maybe I misunderstood your question.
Yeah, I meant like, what? As a prize, like is there...
Like in terms of ladder? Oh, yeah, yes, sure. Yes. The winning maps in the tournament, basically, we'll take the top X amount, and they'll be tested, and all of those will be sent to Blizzard. And they'll review those and select any maps that they like to be brought into the ladder, basically. In the first edition, we had three maps get taken up into the ladder: Cloud Kingdom, Super Famous, Ohana, Super Famous, Coil Compound, not so famous, but let's not go into that. And I hope we can do the same thing again this time. It's up to Blizzard how many maps they want to take. It's got to work with tournaments and tournament timing and their own maps that they want to add in. Right. Yeah.
So, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that you're probably going to ask when you're going to do it again.
My next question.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. We're looking to try host it once every about 3 months, and that gives a good time to do a submission phase, a bit of testing, and then a bit of time for the community to get adjusted to whatever the new maps, if they're taken up or something like that, and then start the whole process again, because it needs to be done that way.
Okay, every 3 months, so 4 times a year. That's when was the first one?
How long was it? Way too long ago. It was actually
a year and a half ago.
Okay, so this is going to be, you've structured this, so it's much more regular now than it's ever been.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah. Awesome.
And something interesting I just kind of observed is if it does happen 4 times a year, it'll basically, TLMC maps will be on ladder every new season. Ladder.
Like I said, I think the ladder is an effective way to create change in the map pool in tournaments. And so I'm working quite hard on making sure we can do this 4 times a year to keep regular maps coming in.
Okay, excellent. Let's see, what else? That's good stuff. Man, I'm like drawing a blank here. I had like this thought, and then like now it's just gone.
I might as well add, since we're here, that this season of TLMC, we've got some good judges lined up. First up, we've got Ragu, who was one of the top 7 from the last contest.
Yeah.
We also have Monk, our strategy guy. He does a lot of good stuff. Then we've got some pro players coming. We've got TLO coming in, doing some judging.
Nice.
We also have Morrow coming in to judge that. So hopefully we'll get a good balanced opinion of all the maps submitted. And thus far, we've had around 150-200 submissions for maps, plus what it will come in over the next 12 or 13 hours or so.
I see. Okay. Yeah. That the whole judging of this kind of leads into a pretty good question, which is, we only have about 10-15 minutes before the Q&A, but so trying to make this short as possible is going to be tough, but how restricted do you map makers feel right now from the standpoint of creativity in making maps? Because, you know, I've probably talked to each of you individually, maybe not you, Alec, but definitely John and Jesse, that I've always felt that, you know, the extremes, you know, for maps could go a lot further right now. You know, I feel like there's certain parameters that are put on all the maps, whether it is because of how the game is designed, you know, from a unit standpoint or not. But there are parameters that are put around you guys, and even some of the parameters even in the TLMC rules. Honestly.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. That as far as map making concepts go, TLMC does have kind of a burden that it must, that the maps can't be too controversial. Like it would be a bad decision on our behalf to pick something like Arkanoid because of how radical that is, and that's just an unfortunate consequence of the fact that we're trying to get this into the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, like, we brought it up earlier, if you're working directly with the tournament, you can do things that are more radical. And the only testing for that at the moment is being done by CESPA, really. I guess GSL a bit, but mostly CESPA.
Okay. John, I'm sure, Alec,
the mappers have much more to say.
Yeah, I kind of want to hear y'all's opinion on it. Alec, you want to go first?
Sure. I mean, maps are very, very restricted by the game design, like, in total. I mean, you know, Protoss needs a natural to forge fastest span. Zerg needs a third that's not blocked by rocks, and they can spread creep too, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So those parameters are very set and rigid, but at the same time, we haven't seen maps that have executed the full extent of what these parameters have to offer. The only really good, solid, I guess you could say, standard maps that don't have all these extra fancy things would be, like, you know, Ohana, Cloud Kingdom, Daybreak, and that's really about it. I mean, if you go look at any other ladder map in the past, they've all had problems. Entombed Valley, very easy for Protoss, and they had to adjust the spawns. Star Station, they had to adjust the spawns. Antigua, they had to adjust the spawns. You know, every map had a problem with it, except for mainly those three, to the extent. So, even though we are very rigid and kind of stuck, there's still a lot for us that we can do in those rigid rules, because they haven't been seen yet, at least in the public eye.
And what do you think of those rigid rules, though?
They suck.
No, I mean, do you think they're correct? I mean, because obviously, if you talk to every player, they would absolutely agree with you that those parameters need to be in every game. But what do you think the players would do if, say, there wasn't an easy third for Azuri to take?
You know, it goes back to that point that we kind of had there, like a little earlier ago, where if there wasn't an early third to take, Zerg would only be able to win early game, where they do like Baneling Bust or whatnot. Would that be okay? I mean, you know, it's one of those situations where right now everyone's like, no, that would be terrible. Like, everybody should have the opportunity to macro. Everybody should have the opportunity to cheese, macro, do whatever they want in the map. Whereas back in Brood War, it was more like we had map-specific strategies and players that were good on certain maps. Like, you would say, like, Flash is really good on this particular map. Or et cetera, et cetera. So we don't really have that because of how we're looking
at
maps.
I think we need to get back to that, because that's a whole different dynamic to the competitive aspect of this, right? Even just the tournament models or team models and, you know, team play kind of models, right? There's an extra level of strategy that's added when you have that kind of concept.
I guess if we're going into that, I will say that I do work for the Liquid Pro Team, and we have players set up for particular maps. It's very much a strategic consideration that we make. Yeah, we do. Like, when Antigua was still being played, TLO was our Antigua guy. That's why he was so good at that map.
Yeah.
And so some teams, probably not all of them, but we certainly do take that very seriously.
Well, I'm sure every team in CASPA actually takes that seriously. It's just the difference between, you know, I guess, a guy who's generally good at every map and a guy who specializes in a map is probably not as great as it was in Brood War.
So, Jesse, right. Let me ask
you. I would say it's not cool. Yeah, sure.
Just take it to Chris's extreme that he likes to think about, I think, is cases of multiplayer competitive maps where, say, you have lava rising every 60 seconds and the players know it's going to rise every 60 seconds. And I'm asking you because you work for the pro team. Do you think your players would be willing to play on a map like that in a competitive setting?
I know what you're getting at. If you put it in a tournament where they're capable of avoiding it, no. If you put it in Pro League, yes. Simple as that.
Okay.
If they're made to play the map, they will win it. Because if they don't, they're not going to win any money. And money's important.
Well, okay, so that brings up a good point.
That's exactly why the KESPA model works, right? They can force players to play silly maps, basically. And if that map fails, then,
the fact that you said silly maps is, I feel like,
I was just going to point that out, too.
That bothers me, dude.
Ever heard of Bakuma Joji?
No.
No, you haven't. It was a Pro League map they used in Brood War. They decided that they'd double the amount of resources in everyone's base. It was a train wreck.
Yeah, but it is what it is. You know what I mean?
It was done in a Pro League environment. It was a dumb map, though.
But that's just one map.
Yeah, it's just one map. It's just like an experiment and it's gone. I mean,
if you have the environment to test out these crazy, fantastic concepts, you know, you have maybe one tournament where, we could have done a better job. Maybe the public's opinion of who the front runner was didn't win it. As a result of that map, arg, we hate you. But come next tournament, you immediately turn around and replace that.
Sigma, you're absolutely right. I mean, the best example of that is a map called Requiem in Brood War. And that was the first map that really had, like, a really strange reverse island trait about it. And at the time, it was horribly experimental. it worked. And we saw that feature retained in future maps. And I agree that if you don't do this testing, you don't know if it does work or not. And we're kind of lacking in that testing. Thankfully, KISP is doing a lot of that testing for us. But up until very recently, they haven't even been involved. So we're still very much in the dark. They're, like the lava rising every 60 seconds, like that could be a very interesting thing, right?
I mean, it's a completely different game.
Yeah.
You know? And there's nothing wrong with that.
It could be really interesting, but it does need to be tested at some level, right? And you know, if it works, we can carry it forward into future maps.
It does, and you made a good point in that it works with Pro League, right? Because you can choose guys who specialize in that map, yeah. Right? And not have everybody practice all these different styles in every map. So it kind of brings the question of: so is it viable then for one-on-one tournaments to ever pick up these more? You know, these more, I don't know how you want to say it, just, I guess, riskier maps or however you want to describe it.
I would say yes, but there's still a limit on how wild or crazy the maps can be. I mean, Arkanoid kind of shows that. I mean, it's like if you were to take, like, the Ultralisk, right, and just say, okay, it now does 100 damage to light. Every Terran would just, like, cry, you know, Protoss would cry, it would just be less. And, I mean, that's an obviously broken change. So, I mean, maps have that too. There's just obviously broken maps that you know won't work just by looking at them. Yeah. So, to an extent, there's still got to be some limitations on what we're going to test and what we're going to spend our time testing. Is it worth testing this map? Because there might be another better map that's more likely to work and would be better off being tested.
I just want to jump in here because in Brood War, I don't talk a lot about Brood War, but we've basically gone through this exact same thing in Brood War. The OSL was notorious for always picking extreme innovative maps. I mean, hopefully people are familiar with Crossfire. That was actually a Brood War map, and when it was first introduced, it was extremely out there. But it worked, and obviously it worked really well because we retained it in StarCraft 2. And the reason why it worked for the OSL is because they couldn't avoid those maps. You were eventually going to hit this map, and you had to learn it. Whereas I find a lot of the tournaments at the moment either have a veto system or will have loser picks, which allows players to avoid new maps or maps that they haven't practiced as much. And as long as we retain that kind of system, I don't think we'll ever be able to introduce radical maps into a tournament because players will just avoid it. And like we saw it at DreamHack, basically.
I see. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that, you know, we're having the exact same issue with Brood War, yet we haven't learned much.
We obviously haven't. That's no one's fault. The Brood War community was quite a niche community. I mean, talk to any StarCraft 2 pro that came from Brood War, and you'll hear that, you know, maps are a big part of what we did.
Yeah, of course.
It wasn't in Warcraft 3. It wasn't in any other game. And the only people who do realize the importance of maps and have that infrastructure set up already was the Koreans, and that's why they're so far ahead of us. It's just what was expected to happen in that niche community that isn't expected to happen outside of that. It's quite strange, really.
But this is... Okay, this is getting ridiculous then, because it's like... this is something that's not, I feel like, not like the player situation where the Koreans are ahead of us. This is something we could change tomorrow.
We could, yeah.
I mean, absolutely, it could change tomorrow. It doesn't even take, you know, years or however much infrastructure to, like, build up. This literally could change tomorrow.
And if everybody was on board, I mean...
Yeah, exactly. The thing is that tournaments aren't quite... don't have the same value set as the Korean tournaments did. Like, they were still trying to carve out StarCraft as a viable esport. Like, esports in general, they were trying to develop it on TV. And they were doing things to survive and trying to innovate the game, keep it interesting so they could build this industry around it. In the West, we didn't really have that, right? We just swapped out Halo for Call of Duty or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And they were more focused on building up themselves as a brand, as opposed to the game, if you can understand the distinction.
All we're doing is copying. Basically.
Oh yeah, sure. No, I agree.
I agree.
That's
basically what you're saying.
We could copy it overnight, but a lot of tournaments don't see it the same way that we do. And like, a lot of tournaments are, more importantly, aren't willing to fund something like this. Because it got to the point in Brood War where OSL had their own map-making team, MSL had their own map-making team, Pro League had their own map-making team,
yeah.
And these were all funded teams. I mean, I'm sure we have an interview on Team Liquid with one of those mappers, actually, from 2004. Yeah.
I mean, getting funded is the next level, okay? I mean, once this is all viable, then funding was the net, you know, the last question probably. But even just getting your, I think all you guys would be happy if even your maps were played in tournaments, right? That'd be enough right?
The goal right now is to have your maps played, and that's it. That's all there is as far as a goal right now, because no one. Is thinking in terms of, well, how do we push this further and further? How do we get paid for this? Because we're not there, because we can't see it yet, unfortunately. Right. So what we need to do is we need to start branching out as map makers and starting to get into various different kinds of services in order to try and fix that.
But word of warning, you don't want to set up a culture where map making is free, because then you're kind of trapped into the cycle of well, I can just get my maps for free from somewhere else. That's not necessarily a good thing for the long-term sustainability of having good map makers, right?
Unfortunately, that's the way it is. It's unfortunate, too.
I agree. It's just something that... it should be in the back of their minds.
Yeah, but they're not going to realize the importance of or the value of it until they actually use it. And obviously free is the easiest channel to use, right? So,
if there was something about our maps, like let's say if we got, you know, GameHeart involved in our maps, and GameHeart would only publish on our maps, and tournaments really wanted to use GameHeart, then suddenly, they're like forced to use our maps. So in that scenario, that I mean, the community could come together in those kind of situations to do things like that.
Maybe I should have had Ryan on this show.
After all. But Alec, here's the issue with that position is that you run into those other tournaments who don't want to use GameHeart, and then their content is vastly limited, and you get even further divisions within the community. And we don't want further division. We want try and create unity right now.
Everyone wants to use GameHeart now, though. Everyone's seen it. Everyone's seen it in GSTL. Everyone's seen it in, you know, other tournaments. It's kind of a thing that, like, if that tournament's
there
using
is,
it, and
there
everybody
is one organization
it.
That doesn't.
Yeah, it's called
not naming
WCS.
Names. Well, not naming names or anything.
One organization. But
yes, that is true.
So, okay, guys, why don't we start taking some questions from the viewers? And if you guys want to call in your questions, particularly you other map makers out there, you know, maybe some topics that we didn't cover you think that we should talk about, go ahead and Skype me, or add me on Skype. My Skype ID is ChamMV, and I will pull you on here. I know Travis. I'm not sure if he's around. Let's see. He added me earlier. See if he wants. Yeah, it looks like he's here, is what he says. So here we go. It's going to might mess up some of these, but yeah, I think a lot of folks are watching, which is great. Let's see. Travis.
Hello.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Oh, not too bad.
Hey, so any topics or questions or ideas you think that we didn't cover here during, I guess, the you know, just the last hour and a half or so?
Yeah, for sure. I guess I'll shoot it back kind of to when we were talking about what map makers can do just on their own and in terms of what kind of infrastructure that we can start getting together. And I know you guys were talking about, you know, contacting smaller tournaments and such, but I'm going to shoot this to you, John. You know, what about the idea of, like, getting in touch also with sub-premier teams, just for the aspect of getting some higher level play data? Like right now, us at Galaxy, what we're doing is we're trying to form some partnerships with guys like Impulse Esports. We also have Fever Clan and their team, Team Viral and such. And we're just trying to get the ball rolling just in terms of, you know, just getting that play data in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, I just wanted to see what you guys kind of thought about, you know, maybe taking an approach sort of like that.
play data is very valuable if you have a whole lot of it. I mean, if you go to a tournament and say, hey, we have 3,000 replays of this map showing that it's balanced and provides good gameplay, I mean, that has some power behind it no matter how you put it. And if that's public, then, you know, you have people going, wow, maybe this map should be in the map pool, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I think it can be done. It's just getting to that point of doing it. Like, how do you do that? How do you get 3,000 replays, you know? How do you get 3,000 people to, submit replays?
So, Alec, if you have, like, EG and TL both saying that these are legit maps and should be taken very seriously, I think that carries just as much weight as 3,000 games of play data.
Probably, yeah. I would agree with that.
And I think that's what Travis is getting at.
EG and TL to start, but like just but, yeah, some of these sub-premier guys just to get the ball rolling, right? And then we can move up maybe to a Team Liquid or an EG.
Yep. Richard, John, what do you think of that?
Getting the teams themselves involved.
What do you think getting the teams involved in this?
I mean, it's problematic, isn't it? Because for all obvious reasons. I mean, it would be a great way to go, like, no doubt about it, but I just feel, I know, like, let's say you've got a player that, I know, plays a particular race, and then the map's deemed to have a slight imbalance, and, you know, it can be a thorny area, I feel. You're better off getting the people that are kind of allegedly independent from the competitive element of the game, you know, like a shoutcaster.
They get paid to play that race.
But it's not even just limited to the race thing, to be honest. I mean, I'm simplifying the point I'm trying to make, I guess, and I'm not probably making a very good argument. I mean, there's different players that view different things, you know. They prioritize different elements of the game. Like, for example, someone like a TLO who, you know, he loves changing meta. He likes new things. You know, I know him quite well. We always talk at tournaments. And he loves the new challenges, the exciting thing. You know, that's what he's all about. So, you know, he'd be way more open to some, say, for example, some experimental stuff. And then if there was one map he had a particular aptitude on and was, like, kicking everyone's ass on it, and then the team are going, you know what, we'd really love to see this map all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's like you've got all these personality types. And you've got all these players that have, you know, different elements of the game that they excel at because the game is so wide and so broad. There's so many issues around getting player buy-in in a way that, say, an FPS isn't. Because an FPS is, you know, how far can you learn a pre-aim? How fast can you move your mouse to a pre-selected spot? You know, timings, things like that. I mean, it's not comparable to an RTS just in terms of depth. So I think you've got an issue there. And I just feel the people who need to champion it are the people who always profess to love the game and want it to be around, which is generally the casters, because they seem to take the most...
Casters and personalities like Total Biscuit and Husky and...
Yeah. So still to get, like, a ton of games, like, you know, data, it isn't a bad... For me, it's not a bad idea to have the teams kind of get you some of this data, but, you know, to be heavily influenced by their opinions is... I don't know. It just can be a dangerous thing. I think the ideal, like, panel or group of people to maybe get feedback from would be a group of, like, retired players or players that really aren't in the competitive scene anymore, you know, that are semi in the competitive scene.
Problem you've got with that is retired players in all games generally get left behind. They try and come back and talk intelligently about the game that they retired from, and they can't do it because they are retired.
Well, so, you know, it could be a mechanical in the same thing way, versus your, I mean,
you would get, I don't know, a retired police guy from like the 50s to come and talk about modern
policing.
Come
on, that's not what I'm talking. We're not talking about 50-year-old guys, dude. We're talking about 28-year-old
guys. Fall off, Chris, big time. You know, I see it all the time.
No, they fall off mechanically for sure, but they don't necessarily fall off with the understanding of the game and how it can play out and just, you know, potentially how it could work out. I mean, these people that would be involved anyways would not be those guys. They're just like, I mean, you're talking about a policeman that's just sitting on his couch, like, you know, for the last 20 years, you know, and he's like a big old gut or something. There's nothing equivalent to that. Nothing, you know, you're not going to pick a guy who's been out of the, you know, that played Brood War 10, 15 years ago. No, you're going to pick a guy who just recently retired from StarCraft 2 or something like that.
Travis, I just want to bring up that your model was actually, and probably still is, continually to be successfully employed in the Kesper scene. They always contract. They always sent the alpha maps out to one particular team, which rotated each season, and they'd playtest the maps and give them feedback, and maps would be cut or not cut based on that feedback.
Yeah. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. Yeah. Feedback is one thing, as opposed to asking teams and players which maps should be a part of a tournament. There's a big difference there. It is
one
very
team, too. So a different single team would be... I don't know.
But that's just feedback, though. That's
No. I mean, he's saying it's feedback, but you made it sound like they were cutting based on that feedback.
Yeah, well, they'd be given six or so maps that say these maps worked good internally, these maps did not work internally. And there is a vested interest, at least in that scene, for having playable maps, because if they're not, you're stuck with them for the next season, and that if Zerg is strong on this map, then Zerg is strong for everyone on this map.
Oh, okay. So within a team, okay, I see what you're saying.
It's not the be-all and end-all.
That's kind of what I was kind of going with, what Jesse is saying here, and getting this kind of like feedback, and just the play data. And then from that, you get balance stats, right? And that is something that we can use as map makers to leverage when we're contacting tournaments and saying, hey, we have this map. We think it's really cool. These are the balance stats behind it. This is what the teams are kind of saying, so on and so forth. And just as like a general pitch to the tournaments in order to start using, community-made maps.
Yeah, and okay. One thing about the Kesper model was that they did rotate the teams, and that basically ensured that one team wasn't having too much say over how the next season would be playing out. And that just ensured that the problems that Richard was identifying, like if one team was particularly focused towards, you know, we really want to keep attacking all the time, we don't want to play macro games, then that their influence would be, you know, one season only, and they would move on, things like that.
Right.
It's probably something you should keep in mind going forward, Travis.
All right. Thanks, Travis, man. We're going to move on to the next question.
For sure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. All right, we got King Corwin on. More map makers.
Yeah, lots of map makers.
I'd hope so. I'd hope so.
Yeah.
Oh, is he not around? He added me. Okay, we might have to wait on him. Right, let me get Alistar. Guys, if you want to call in with your questions, go ahead and add me on Skype. My Skype ID is JimMV.
Hello.
Hey, Alistair, how's it going?
Yo.
I'm good, thanks. My question is, well, it's kind of simple. I was just wondering how exactly people can get into the map-making community. I'm not sure if you mentioned this before in it, as I came in a bit late to the cast, but...
It's pretty easy. You just make some maps, post on Team Liquid, and people come on your maps, and we do have a Skype chat that you're more than welcome to join, and that's really about the extent of it. It's nothing official or membership, you have to sign or whatever. It's just
which forum group should he go to on Team Liquid?
The custom forums, custom maps forums, is where you would post your maps.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I've been trying to make maps. I've made like two or three of them, but the thing is, I'm quite bad at it. I mean, my maps end up looking horrible. So I'm wondering, is there any like specific part of that you can go to learn how to do it properly and stuff?
Do you guys coach? That's basically what he's asking.
I mean, yeah, you could just go to people and ask for help. I mean, I help people all the time. Like, I'm obviously always helping, you know, ESV map makers with, you know, advice and actually editing map files, you know, with them and for them. But I've done that with other people in the past, and I'm welcome to do it again. I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only map maker that would be willing to do that. And to an extent, there's a lot of things that you just kind of have to learn on your own, like, you know, texturing and making your map look good. That's kind of something you just have to kind of pick up on yourself. But learning the basics and how things work is just kind of you can be guided.
Alec, wasn't there someone on ESV who streams their map-making sessions?
Yes, Iron Man SC does stream.
Yep. Iron Man.
I don't know how much he streams anymore because he's already submitted his TLMC submissions, but he used to stream at 11 o'clock Pacific.
And it's a good idea. I told I told Travis that streaming it and doing that sort of thing is a great thing to help promote yourself.
I mean, he still has the VODs. If you want to go watch the VODs, and you can really get a glimpse of that.
Yeah,
I'll have a look at those because that would be really useful. Being able to see someone actually just do it live in front of me.
It is interesting how you guys don't group together like movie makers, say for example, do in esports though. You know, like, if you want to get into movie making, generally what happens is you join a group that has its own website and, you know, its own private forums. Everyone discusses techniques. You submit your video and that kind of community, you know, that community then push it saying, this is our new upcoming guy. This is his first movie. Let's give it a pop, you know, and give it some YouTube likes or whatever. I guess it's map making probably is a little bit more individual. But, you know,
Richard just reminded me of a topic I have to bring up here in a second. But if you guys want to address that first, I'll wait.
I'll talk to it a little bit, Richard. I think part of the problem you're hitting there is that, to use your example, there's quite a number of people that work on movie productions. You have your first camera assistant, you have your grips, you have your actors, your director, your producer, your writer, etc.
Oh no, but I just mean esports movies. I just mean like frag movies or like highlight movies. I don't mean movies. Not movies. I'm definitely not comparing you to Hollywood or anything. Yet.
I think
we'll get there.
I think from our perspective right now, it is that we feel like a segregated portion of the community, and we have only so many. There's probably, I would guess, maybe 50 to 100 melee StarCraft II mappers.
I wouldn't even say 100.
I probably wouldn't go that far, but I don't want to discount anyone out there. Jesse can probably speak better to that with the TLMC right now going, oh gosh, what is this?
I'd say about 50 solid mappers and a bunch of amateur ones, which may or may not return next season.
Okay, and so, yeah, we have a very small group, and we already have that community built up on the Team Liquid SC2 Custom Maps section, where we do go in there and we critique each other constantly. I know that, for instance, Galaxy, as well as Dreamforge, we both have websites currently that we're using to try and create some exposure, create a contact avenue, and develop our product even further than, say, simply going on there and communicating with the community that's already present. So.
Right. No, that's great. Alistair, thanks for the question, buddy.
Thank you very much for accepting my call. All
right, okay. Take care.
Thanks, everybody.
All right, I'm going to bring up something.
It's good to have another British accent on this show as well.
Exactly.
I'm not letting that one pass, man. We've got to stick together. Great stuff.
Big old hearts to the UK folks.
Yo.
Okay, so time to break out the therapy session here. So, we talk about all these different, you know, groups and teams and everything right now, right? And Richard, you brought up the fact that, you know, you're surprised that I guess they're not kind of collaborating as much. And, you know, one thing to bring up is that because we have all these different teams, do you think there's an issue with competitiveness between the teams and even just a little bit of unhealthiness going on, you know, amongst you guys? You know, because it's just, I don't know, it's either jealousy or not. You know, do you feel it's like that? Or is it more of a okay, we're all collaborating, we're all helping each other out?
It's from my outside point of view. Yeah, from my outside point of view, it got pretty bad at one point with during ESV's reign. But since then, it's a friendly competition, I'd say. Like, they're all friends, basically. They just happen to be on different teams.
Okay, what's your take? I'm going to get each one of your takes on it. John, what's your take?
I mean...
Or Alec, go ahead, Alec. Go ahead.
Okay, I mean, it is competitive. I mean, we do compete. We do have our own map-making chats. We all do have kind of our own secrets, like whether it be like certain things we can do aesthetically or, you know, certain ideas or whatever. But for the most part, we all collaborate together for, you know, the common goals of which every map maker kind of seeks. And okay. It's a very open-ended community.
Good. John, what's your take? Or Sigma?
I would definitely agree with that, that it is very friendly competition. There's definitely moments where it gets very heated. Just to kind of illustrate that, last week, ESV was able to get one of my ex-map makers to transition over to their team. And we went through it cordially, but when I first found out, I have to admit, you know, I was kind of like, damn those ESV guys. I just want to beat them into the ground right now.
We're evil, man.
Well, I mean, so that's kind of the reason I brought it up. I didn't want to bring it up just to, like, you know, bring up some dirt or anything like that. The reason I brought it up is because, you know, you talked about structure, you in particular, Sigma, right? And having structure in these teams and the organization. But for me, it's like, I kind of question sometimes whether, you know, there needs to come a point where it's like the top map makers individually kind of stand out first. And then let's just say it's a scenario where the tournaments start hiring these guys, and then they can't make maps fast enough, and then they start getting teams, you know, teams of folks that are, you know, they start building a team that ends up, I guess, servicing that request, you know, kind of thing.
Well, I mean, that brings up an interesting point, because once you start having that kind of integration and system and et cetera, then you do have serious competition, and then it's not as friendly. So
yeah, that was the point I was going to make. As soon as there is that clear pathway to success, and by, you know, success, I don't mean making a great community map so you get patted on the back 10 years from now. Hey, I played your map. I'm talking about cash money and working for a big company with a chance to maybe get into other games or whatever down the road, which is what everyone wants in esports. Everyone wants a job and a viable job doing what they're passionate about and fiscal rewards. I mean, that's what we're talking about, right?
Here's the issue you run into there, though, Richard, is that with the way the StarCraft II end-user license agreement is structured, it is a shrink-wrap contract. Map makers do not have any property rights to the maps that they produce.
Yep.
So it becomes a question of how do we charge for the services that we are providing? And that's one of those things that we are all trying to figure out and all scrambling to do, because we have to step lightly around this legal contract that we agreed to just to play the game, let alone map.
Well, it's obviously a service-oriented contract, right? I mean, it can't be a product-oriented contract, right? That it would have to be, correct? I mean,
it would be the way I envision it, and I'm probably talking a little too much here, but the way I see it...
Just share it.
Guys, I'm doing this for the sake of the community. Just keep that in mind.
That's right. That's right.
The way I envision it would be that due to that end-user license agreement, what would ultimately end up happening, and there would be some interpretation issues, I'm certain here, would be that the individual tournaments would hire out map makers as a graphic designer, in which they are not paying them for the end product.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Rather, they are paying them for the time spent creating that product. So very, very touchy interpretation of how that end-user license agreement is structured, I'm certain, but definitely something to consider. And it's something that I know I'm considering and talking to legal counsel about, and I'm certain a couple other people are too. So,
well,
that's, I don't see that. That can't be too much different than, for instance, me saying, you know, I'm going to hire an admin to help me run a StarCraft II tournament. I'm paying him for his time, so I could see that could be similar.
But what is the content that your admin is producing? Is that inherently your intellectual property, or does that just by nature of your previous agreements belong to Blizzard?
Yeah, the map makers bring up a valid point in that stuff they're making isn't theirs to own.
No, I think that is the model that you have to take, is the one that John, that Sigma is talking about. I mean.
Yeah, exactly. He's right. That's the model you have to take. And it is unfortunate that they don't have any rights whatsoever to their intellectual property.
Yeah, I mean, Blizzard in the end can, you know, veto anything. I mean, they could, it could get to the point where you know, Sigma, you go up to, you know, Robert Olin at DreamHack and you have a contract and he's supposed to pay you for whatever, right? For the X right. number of hours to make the map, and then Blizzard can poo-poo that. It doesn't affect your mm-hmm. your contract. I mean, you know what I mean? It might affect, like, whether you get another gig or not because of it, but in the end, Blizzard doesn't want to do that to you. I mean, I don't think they don't want to do that to you. I mean,
I'm just, from an outsider's point of view, it does look like the let's not have Dota happen to us again clause of the contract.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, man.
That's pretty much what it's about, yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Because, I mean, I don't know. I don't think Blizzard's got particularly jacked. You know, maybe I'm in a minority there. I feel that when you give something over organically and you're kind of saying it's actually not ours, it's something, you know, it belongs to somebody else because we've given them the tools to make it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I can understand them being cautious now, but
yeah.
I don't know. The Dota situation, they can't... I know, it's just like if I give you some bricks... You know, if I sell you some bricks and you go build a house, I can't just fucking move in later, right? Because I sold you bricks. Like, I just... there has to be some sort of, you know, sensible approach to it all. And I definitely agree with what Jesse's saying there. I think, you know, they've had their fingers burnt and maybe they're being a little bit overcautious. Like, whenever we do these shows, Chris, whatever the guest we're having on, whatever they're trying to produce, all of which is for the good of the community, there's always, we're always talking about having to tiptoe around these Blizzard legal issues. And I don't know, I just... Yeah. I think that'll calm down. That'll have to calm down.
No, like I said, they don't want to, you know, that's like, for something else, obviously, right? And that's not for this, so...
Well, really, have we even seen any Blizzard legal issues, or are we just talking a lot about it? I think we're just talking a lot about it. Why not just give it a shot and see what happens?
Yeah, we talk a lot about this potential.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's thus far has probably had the financial backing to feel comfortable to try and take a civil suit against Blizzard Entertainment. I mean, I get free legal representation, and I don't think I would be willing to go there.
There's not much to gain from that. I mean,
I think you'll find that if you that Blizzard probably won't do anything unless you're trying to take it outside of the StarCraft platform.
Yeah,
if you understand what I mean.
I mean, look at Gameheart right now. You know, it's like, you know, Gameheart is like directly competing against them right now. And, you know, Blizzard still allows it to happen, right? I mean, they could easily just shut that down. And Ryan's very worried about that.
I would say that, in a sense, we're all pretty lucky. I mean, Blizzard hasn't... They're not shutting us down.
Blizzard could, shut any of my shows down that uses the game. I mean, any of the VODs, anything.
They really wanted to, but I think we get more worried than maybe we should. I mean, I completely understand what you guys are saying. I mean, especially if you're going to put a lot of time into something and you get to that point like, okay, now I'm going to push it out there, and then you start to worry about it. I mean, I can certainly understand that worry because, I mean, it doesn't matter how many legal representation, you know, how much you have, that Blizzard is a big company and they'll squash you like a bug. But I think maybe we're thinking too much about that, and we definitely should just try some things. I mean, when we talked with Gameheart guy, Ryan, right?
Yeah, Ryan, last week.
You know, when we talked with him, that was one of his worries. Was like, I just want to see where I'm at with this. It's touchy because of the IP and everything. And, I mean, he's actually at a perfect opportunity just to get something in return.
Yeah, just to give you an example of Ryan, right? I mean, I had Ryan and Robert Olin on together, okay, right? And a tournament organizer with, you know, basically a UI developer, but a map developer, right? And, you know, and the interaction we had between the two was that, you know, Robert wants to pay him, right? But because of the IP issue, you know, he can't pay him. And it's not to say, Sigma, that he could have gone with that same exact model, which I was saying that he could have gone to him with. But I feel like Robert might have paid him for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and... Let's be clear, though. There is clearly some precedent of a model similar to what I'm suggesting working, and that's based on the fact of how Kespa pays for map appearances by their specific map team, and GSL, I know in the past, I believe, has given some monetary funds to Team Crox for their maps. It really just becomes an issue of what language you're using and how you're interpreting that. And I think right now, with the way the map teams specifically are structured and how little we have in terms of financial support to go off of, that's just it's a scary thing, quite frankly, to think of going out on that, being the first one to go out on that limb and sort of challenge that. So, but you know, maybe someone will do it. Maybe I'll do it. I don't know. We'll figure it out when we get there.
All right. Let's see. Maybe we have time for one last question. Let's see who the lucky person is. Let's see what we got here. We got a bunch of them, but just want to pick one here. Okay, we'll take. I wish Tim was on, but I don't think Tim's listening. Okay, we got RFD.
Hey, I see Ryan's turned up, man. The Game Heart Master himself. Yeah, there he is.
Yay, Game Heart.
We got him an extra 50 Twitter followers, we did. Yes. I remember that. He signed up to Twitter and he had like none. I think we managed to get him an extra 50, which is totally raised.
I think he had a lot to do with it himself, quite honestly.
There you go. I am Twitter, he says. So there you go. None.
Robinson, what's up, man?
Hey, so I wanted to give a perspective of somebody who's not on a map making team.
Okay, sure.
So I noticed you talked about the infighting in teams, and you know, why don't we all work together and conversations like that. But you know, people get noticeably better when they join a team, regardless of the competition between them. And so I think. Well, that's just something I wanted to throw out there, that even though the team environment isn't as positive as it could be, that it's still entirely helpful to people just producing quality maps, which I think when it all comes down to it, is what we really want to see. So that I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't talking so much within teams. I mean, I can totally see within teams, obviously, you guys working together. I was thinking more like team versus team type of things. And you know, if something good happens to one team, you know, do the rest of the guys, the rest of the teams and community kind of react positively, or, oh man, those maps sucked, why the hell did they get picked up? You know, that type of mentality. Mm-hmm.
Yes and no on both ends, I think. Just to kind of go with the positive side there, I know a lot of people were saying congrats to the Dreamforge team when Atlas got picked up. Yeah, and thanks. And that was a nice feeling. That was a nice feedback to get from the rest of the community that consists not only of non-affiliated map makers, but also the team-affiliated map makers. And, you know, trying to get those positive vibes out there within the community, that's something that I feel is important. So much so that I even tried to create a thread within the Team Liquid forum saying, hey, this is where you share your success stories. And it doesn't matter if it's a big success or a little success, just share your success. Tell us what's going on. You know, let's celebrate each other. You know, and that's we great. Need to do more of that. So
yeah. Link that thread in there.
Coming back to your question, I think Alex got a pretty unique perspective on this, because actually we selected him as one of the top 7 maps in the first TLMC, but he wasn't on a team. And then he got picked up by ESP, and I think he probably has some insight as to how that improved his mapping.
I was overwhelmed when I first started map making with the whole TLMC, because I started mapping like 2-3 weeks before that. Some friends saw the contest, told me to submit. I was like, fine, here you go. I get in the finals, I'm like, holy crap, you know. And then there's all these people telling me how to improve, how to do all these things, giving me all this feedback. And that in itself really helped. Like, just all the, you could say hate, but just even the most negative of feedback, as long as it was beneficial in some way, really helps. Kind of coming from improving. But once I was on ESV, it wasn't so much ESV as just overall community feedback. I mean, ESV contributed just as much as everybody else, I feel, in that sense. But I will say that ESV encouraged me to do certain things over others. So they just knew the scene better, I guess.
If I could jump back in for a second.
Yeah, go for it.
So I noticed we do have a Skype chat that a lot of map makers contribute to, and you can post the map at any point in time and get a lot of feedback on it, and it's wonderful. But when you're in a map making team, you mentioned having you just have more intimate access to each other. You can ask about specific features, and you can post the same map 15 times and won't be assumed that you're spamming or something like that. And so I think it's just a different level of interaction. Is that I'm an outsider, so I don't know, but that's my perception.
If I share something in the general Skype chat, I'm also sharing it everywhere else. And, you know, if you're in multiple chats with me, you know this. I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, like, Jesse Plexa knows this. Like,
yeah, I know.
I'll place the maps everywhere. But, you know, within the map making itself, like, you're constantly more willing, not really more willing, but more open to, like, directly engage with the person. Like the other day, you know, like I was helping out New Sunshine with maps, drawing things out, taking like a lot of time to really, you know, point out things in his maps that weren't, that needed some touching up or whatever. And that doesn't really exactly happen as well as in a very broad Skype chat with like 50, 60 people. So
I guess that's what I wanted to point to.
That's really the biggest advantage to being in a map making team.
All right, Robinson. Well, thanks for your question. And we're kind of running out of time here, so why don't we kind of wrap up the show. I think the show has been pretty interesting, successful. Hopefully all you viewers are learning a few things about the map making community, and hopefully you will support all these map makers and you know, try out all these new maps whenever you see them on TL or on Reddit, and you know, leave feedback, right? I mean, I think any feedback for these guys is good, whether it's, you know, just to help them become better map makers, or in general, just to kind of influence the community in any way with some positive feedback. But why don't we go into some shout outs and thank yous if you guys have any. We'll start out with Alec.
Sure. You can follow me at ESV_TimeTwister on Twitter. Also, ESV has a featured plan channel, a group channel, I think it's a group channel where anyone can join. It's essentially a map testing channel that we're trying to essentially do what we talked about earlier, is getting replays and getting the community involved with map testing. And that's all.
Okay. Sigma?
Yeah, I'll definitely I'll shout out my own personal Twitter address at SigmaFee, SigmaFie. And then if you want to hit up our website sometime, that's dreamforgemaps.net, where we're always trying to show new stuff. And then, of course, I'd like to give a special shout-out to Felix Weber, the creator of sc2melee.net, who kind of, in a way, was the front runner for getting us some legitimization and statistics to base all of our I don't want to call it knowledge, but maybe folksy lore when it comes to maps on. So there you have it.
Yeah, that's a great site. Jesse, shout outs?
Yeah, I guess all from me is that keep your eyes peeled on the TLEMC. Submissions close in 15 hours by my count. So we'll hopefully get all the results for that up as quickly as possible, and hopefully we'll all enjoy that. If you guys have, like, any feedback you think will be useful for me as someone who looks after Team Liquid's mapping interests, just shoot me a PM on Team Liquid. I assume you all have accounts.
It's just Plexa, right?
Plexa. Or find the TLMC thread and just hit PM on the top. It all works.
Okay, awesome. Richard, so three shows, 24 hours, man.
I know, like, I've got around, I've been whoring myself, like, so bad, like, just desperate for E-Fame. Will dance for E-Fame. Yeah, man, I'm pretty beat, but no, I'll tell you what, man, I thought it was a great show tonight. I thought it was educational for a guy like me who knows nothing about anything. I just hope that we can get to a stage where, you know, these guys that are making these maps and adding so much to the game can get to, you know, into a position where other map makers are. You know, I'm thinking of guys like Volcano in Counter-Strike, who's a former competitive player who now makes the official maps, works for Valve. You know, guys like that. It really should be happening in a game as big as StarCraft 2. There should be ways to monetize and incentivize these guys' efforts. And hopefully we're going to start seeing the community wising up to the fact that, you know, we do need guys like this, you know, in any game. And they need to be rewarded, and we got to be willing to take a chance on some of the newer ideas and concepts on the map. So hopefully Blizzard will start backing them. But yeah, just a great show, and you know, one that isn't like, you know, I've never seen a show on map making in any of these other streaming shows, man. So props to you, Chris, for coming up with the idea. You're a smart dude, but you can't grow a good beard.
No. Well, you can't grow a beard at all.
We'll see. All right. I won't shave next week, and then we'll see what it looks like. But John,
well, we won't
you?
See it because it'd be hard to see. But
whatever. It's black.
No, I want to second what Richard said. I actually learned a lot. And again, I mean, like I said earlier, if I had known, you know, a lot about these map making teams and such, I certainly would have reached out to them when running events. And I can assure you, I'm making a promise to Key Hunt, because he was in the chat giving me shit about it, is that I can assure you that when we open up our StarCraft II ladders, team ladders here shortly at IGL, what we'll do is we'll take submissions from any of the map teams. We'll take submissions for, you know, maps, and then we'll have those that are going to be in the ladders, we'll have them vote on it, and we'll put a new map in each, every 2 weeks or something, we'll rotate out the map pool on the team StarCraft ladder. And we'll get some of these maps played. And so I can assure you, and this is to Key Hunt, that I will do
John,
this.
John, I could give you a big kiss right now.
Well, you know, I'm a little...
It's time to blank these guys out and use their picks now.
So that's why I kind of brought that up. Is, I mean, about the in-game ladders. I mean, that's great and everything, and I'm not dumb enough to start up an in-game ladder for 1v1. It's just not going to work, but not at this point. But, I mean, the teams, you know, instead of using Skype and Team Liquid and stuff, I mean, just use a system that's already there. You just play, you report your score, it tracks it, you have it's like the regular in-game ladder. But what we can do is we can add any damn map we want to it, and we'll definitely put in some new maps and awesome. And rotate those through and give it a shot. In fact, just one more shot, as I'm actually today I started writing up the Team Liquid thread that I'll be putting on Team Liquid about the Team StarCraft 2 ladder for Play IGL, so look for that here shortly. So that's kind of my shout out, and then just shout out to Chris and Richard as always.
Twins.
Good stuff.
Twins.
More comments
exactly.
in the chat about exactly. us looking like twins.
So. Of course.
So. I don't have the accent he does by any means, though. So.
No. All right. My accent was trumped tonight by that guy who came on. We should get him back.
Okay, guy. Like, oh man, UK accent, English accents, man. That's why. We gotta have one on here all the time. That's a, yeah. That's why we picked you up, Richard. No, for me, a big shout out to really all the map making community guys. You know, you guys invited me to that Skype convo you guys have, and you know, I've gotten a chance to pick the brains of a lot of you guys, and I really appreciate the time that you know you guys took out to explain to me just what's going on, and obviously you three too, including you three. Coming on the show too, and you know, spending this 2 hours and doing this. Hopefully, I hope this helps out in whatever way possible. And you know, if somebody that's obviously influential in our community, very very influential in our community, or is watching this, you know, please help these guys out. You know, please, we just need more voices for these guys, because maps. Again, I'll just like the overlying theme is that maps are so important to the product that we're trying to build up in esports. And it can be so much more. We're at the tip of the iceberg, but I mean, from the standpoint of like the type of maps and what the game can be. So I hope you guys can see that, and you know, we can get to that kind of just promised land where the game is just diverse and amazing. But anyways, that's going to be it for Climbing the Ladder this week. Next week, we should have Kaldor on next week to talk about just life as a caster in Korea and that kind of good stuff. I try to figure that out really, you know, just figure that with him.
By the sounds of it, Chris, Idra might have some free time now.
Did he really? Oh my god, he got released?
What?
No.
What?
Fucking way.
No way.
Yeah, that just came out.
I just
what?
Saw it,
holy shit, it's number one on live on State of the Game, he was released.
So, you know.
Wow. Wow.
Everyone's like
drama ball.
Everyone's
like eating it right now.
Okay, so do we have enough time for another 2-hour show here, guys?
No, I have to go, unfortunately.
I know. I'm just fucking kidding. All right, guys, go over to State of the Game and watch the craziness that's going over there with JP. But yeah, anyways, that's going to be it for Climbing the Ladder this week. You can watch the VODs.
Way to steal El Thunder. Thanks.
Yeah.
You can watch the VODs.
That was my bad.
You can watch the VODs on
for it. We don't. Oh, I said that out loud. All right.
YouTube.com/ChamAD. That's where we're going to be. The VODs are going to be. You know, I encourage you to spread the word. Get as many people to watch the VODs that didn't watch the show live. And you can follow me on Twitter at ChamManV and follow the stream if you like any of my shows and Filtered, Climb the Ladder, Pro Corner, or Wednesday Night Sprites. But okay, guys, that's going to be it. We'll see you next week. Later.
See you guys.
Peace. Thank you.
Thanks for
the show, guys. Oh, actually, credits.